Welcome to the Lorehounds. We're not sure we should be your guides to Anthrocon.
Yeah, John, so I'm curious what your fursona is.
People tell me I would make a good dragon.
Would you? Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
But I go the opposite direction. I'm John. I do nude yoga frequently, like Dr. Abbott.
Right.
And you, David?
I'm David, and I've been stockpiling toner since 1988. So
you've got a monopoly going. You've got a corner on the market.
That's right. You know, as Gen Xers, right? You know, I was like, what am I going to do with all this toner? I don't want to store it in my basement until the apocalypse comes.
Oh, gosh. Well, this is our coverage of The Pit, episode 9 of season 2. Titled 3 p.m.
Indeed it is. And you can get in touch with us by sending us email to ptmc@thelorehounds.com. Our networks are still up as of this moment. So, you know, get your, I have to find a fax machine. I got toner, but I got no fax machine. So
we're actually going to be recording over Telegram.
Very good. As always, there are links in the show notes for all of our things like our Discord, our community Discord server, all of the other affiliates and other shows that are in the Lorehounds community, and also the Notion-based show guide, where we're keeping track of all the characters and patients and such like that. I think the patient list is a little bit out of sorts this week. However, the characters are up to date. Nancy, hand of the pod, has jumped in and is keeping that updated. And that is a really helpful thing. So if you're wondering, like, who's that person that just walked by or said that thing, it's really great on a mobile as like a second screen, and you can just sort of scroll through the characters. And so there's a link for that in the show notes.
Very cool. Well, we've got a lot going on here on the Lorehounds. You did a mid-season check-in with Ian and John.
That is right, and that is out in the feed as we speak. And that's Ian from the Captain's Pod and John from the Dune Minute podcast, a couple of our allied podcasts. And in separate occasions, I was talking to Ian and John, and each of them were like, oh, the pit! So I was like, okay, well, you know, I can't not have you not talk about it. So we got together and had just a chat about where we are and in the season and how the show is just like, it touches your life in so many different ways. There's mm-hmm. so many relevant things. And so it was really cool conversation. I would definitely check it out if you just kind of want to, you know, get a different perspective on it rather than just John and I's. It's a really fun conversation.
You don't need any other perspectives, but if you want them.
Yes, if you want them, they're there for you.
Should we run our contest that you've instituted?
Well, the contest, I kind of already ran the contest, and I gave you that audio clip. And I think if you, I don't know that you've heard it. So if you play it, tell me what you think, because this is who I think the winner is.
Oh, okay. I thought this was a compilation. I was
thrown off by the title. No. Yes, this is the winner.
Yeah. All right. So, but I don't want these baby Jane Does to go to waste. So can we play each one on another episode?
Yes, I can. I can gather up the rest of them. They're actually on the drive, in the shared drive. There's a folder.
All right. We'll get it set up for next week.
And people should continue to send it. We can run this all. Like, if you want to knock Jessica off the hill and you want to try to take her spot, you should write in, or you should just send in your clip just because it's fun. It's just fun to say baby Jane Doe.
So I guess Jessica's the winner then. Should we hear Jessica's entry?
Yes, she's king of the hill right now, right? So, you know, if somebody else can knock her off by the end of the season, you know, then, you know, all comers are welcome.
I'm here for it. But for now, all hail Jessica. Let's go.
Baby Jane Doe.
Pretty good. That's
pretty good. I need a second. Yeah.
Baby Jane Doe.
All right, good. The first one cleanses the palate. The second one, you really get the notes of the wine.
Right. Yeah.
Very nice, Jessica. You know, of course, always welcoming new entries because this is a very silly competition, but wonderful. Thank you.
And I guess we should say we're a little later than we normally record this week just because of life. But that's the way it goes, but we're here. And this is something else kind of weird happened, John, and I don't know where else to talk about it. I suppose we could talk about it on Second Breakfast when we record that next subscriber exclusive podcast. But Discord told us that just the other day was our 4-year anniversary.
Well, we're in a healthier relationship than Garcia and Santos.
And there's no HR. We're on the same power level here, so there's no problematics to our relationship.
I've seen a lot of debates about that. Because she's not on the same reporting line, right? Like, she's in a totally different unit, but she is definitely, like, you know, she can
affect the trajectory of her career.
She could probably help her get a fellowship in surgery if she wanted to. And surgery was her other. Yeah. Wasn't that Santos's other desire?
I think she wanted to. Yeah, she just wanted to be a hot shot. She's a hot shot.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah.
But I think that's what we can definitely talk about that, because I have some thoughts. They're doing something with Santos around pediatrics. So I think we should dive into that. But what are your microwaved takes?
Microwave? That sounds like they were hot at one point, and now
they've cooled off.
And now they're just never going to be as good as they once were.
Unless it was a Hot Pocket.
Unless it was a Hot Pocket. That's the quality of our podcast now. We've really gone downhill in recent years.
It's going to stay molten hot until the universe, until the heat death of the universe itself.
Now, I'm not a connoisseur of Hot Pockets anymore. I was as a kid.
Didn't we have a second breakfast about that? Didn't we?
I believe we did, but I think that they got rid of the crisper sleeve on some of them.
Okay.
And people were big mad. They were like, what's the point of the Hot Pocket without the crisper sleeve?
Right.
We're really off track here. Okay.
Well, come for the medical drama, stay for the Hot Pockets.
Well, there's your taste of second breakfast.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really fun episode. Poor Giovanni, I will say. I don't think it was really, you know, 100% her fault, but she definitely is the fall person for it. I love Whitaker. I think he is very empathetic, and he is a rising star in this cast. I continue to think they're not doing enough with Mel, but I think that she's going to have a big role in the second half of the season. So I'm looking forward to that.
And that's the interesting thing about this big cast kind of show, because your budget also depends on how many minutes of screen time do these different actors get and at what rate they are. So there's a whole like crazy calculus that goes into not only the construction of the story, but then who's billing what for screen time.
Yeah.
So it's weird like that.
Yeah, and obviously Robbie has some darkness brewing here. I am very worried about his trajectory. Maybe if I don't come back, it'll be a sweet bachelor bad. And even Whitaker is like, huh?
Yeah. That's a weird thing to say.
Guys, I think Dad's in trouble.
Yeah.
And then the way he brushes off Abbott, too, is pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I'm sure I'm forgetting something because now it's been a couple days, but... Mm-hmm. I'm excited to dive in to details. How about you?
I am like, where the hell, WTF is the hospital administration? Why aren't people from the upper floors down there pulling staff and helping them resource this thing? They're having to scrounge on their own. So I'm really mad at hospital administration.
I think they asked one question. Is Robbie still working?
Right,
yeah. Exactly. All right. We're not going anywhere near that. Yeah.
too much smoke for us for that.
Yeah. And I don't think he wants them there. I think he'd be like, you're fucking it up.
But they should be, you know, like, hey, here's two extra staff members from this floor. And here's a staff member from this department. You're now a runner, right? You know, they could be like directing the resources to them. That's my point is that there's a misallocation of resources relative to the needs of the various departments, and administration should be helping them run their logistics, not, you know, anyway.
But instead we just have Monica who suffers no fools.
Nah, at all. Go do something that you know how to do.
Loved it.
Loved that. It was perfect. I continue to be, impressed by the camera work that goes on here, the blocking and the staging. There was this great moment where they rack focus from Jude across to Nurse Jessie, who's in the room with Brooke McCord, you know, and the woman with the eye stroke thing going on. And we just, the way that they can transport us across the department with just these little camera moves, or we're following somebody and then we pick up somebody else we follow through. It's just incredible. Incredible amount of work and creativity on the spot. So it's really fun.
Yeah.
The show hit me three times pretty hard this hit me emotionally, like right, pressing my emotional buttons with Roxy, because I think we're definitely heading towards a death with dignity kind of thing there. with Howard and his sister and his sort of his life chances, and then with Amaya, the woman with polycystic ovarian syndrome. Is it syndrome? Is it a and then medical stuff down here?
Yeah,
PCOS.
Yeah, PCOS is what a lot of people say.
Yes, syndrome. It is syndrome. Yeah, when she gives McKay that look, like, oh damn, you like did me a solid here. You like you looked after me in a way that people haven't. And it's just like, oh come on, man, like you're making me cry here. Like this is, it's just hitting me. But then it knows how to leaven the humor, and so every time somebody would walk by the furry costume, they'd kind of like do a like, huh? But then keep moving on, like nothing. Like you see all kinds of stuff in this emergency department. Even though it's attracting your attention, but like you still move on. And so just that whole like subplot thing was just the right amount of layering of funny to balance out the tugging of the heartstrings with a whole bunch of other stories. So yeah. I just continue to be impressed by how well they are able to balance all of this.
Yeah. Little moments like, what's that guy who's been there all day who got the shower early on?
Oh, Digby.
Digby going, I'll give you guys some room, you know, like I'll get myself out of the, like, I don't know, him butting in this very serious situation and just like, they did not need his help. You know what I mean? Like, it was just funny.
And then they come back to him and he's like, good job, team.
Yeah, that, I mean, anybody who's like trying to like butt in when medical professionals are doing their job, but like in a nice way, you're almost like, child, sit down. You know what I mean? Just that, like, if you have medical training and you want to help, that's one thing. And often they won't help because, you know, they don't want to get in the team's way, but it's just funny. You know, he's like, I'm just here for moral support.
So, yeah. So just again, really, really well. And I was thinking about this. We were talking about a little bit in the mid season with Ian and John that I felt like season one was throwing a lot more emotional jabs and hooks and like really constantly throwing a lot of emotionally weighted content at us. And this one, they're not doing it as much. And it's a lot more even keeled. And I think that's a more sustainable burn rate for the show, right? If this was a really saccharine sweet and they were really really loading us with a lot of I'm mixing my metaphors all over the place here, but you know, if they were just really loading the emotional content, I think it would get hard to watch after a while. It would be a little soapy and dramatic. And this is just, they're trying to find a balance point, and I think they're zeroing in on it. And I think it'll be really interesting to see when we hit season three, how well that they've dialed in all of these fine tuning controls for delivering heartfelt story, but not overloading us at the same time.
I think they're just doing it more like in cycles in this season, right? Mm-hmm, instead of, I mean, based on the end of this episode, it could be that we have a big disaster coming, but it sounds like that's just a few people,
right?
Not like a huge thing. Who knows? Who knows what's gonna happen?
Were you? I was a little bit like, oh, that's a little weird—a water slide disaster. Like they've got to give us one disaster thing for the season.
But I'm glad really? It wasn't like there were hundreds of people on the water slide. Yeah, you know,
again, something as high drama as the Pit Fest shooting or something like that.
Turns out Jake and his new girlfriend were at the water park.
Other a weaker show would do that, right? You know, like
guy is living in Final Destination.
Terrible, terrible. There were a couple of leftover things from episode 8. There was so much in our outline from last week that I didn't want to let these fall. So there's this question of I had in the notes, the duality of Dana.
Mm-hmm.
And it just this, how she could go from being calm, cool, and collected when she's teaching Emma, Nurse Emma, and working with the patients to like just absolutely losing her shit. Justifiably so, when she finds that rape kit that hadn't been collected,
right?
And or when a staff member or when a patient threatens, you know, a staff member,
yeah.
And you know, we all love Dana and we all depend on her, and she's the rock that we depend on. But man, do not get her on your bad side. Otherwise, there's going to be hell to pay. And do not forget to pick up those rape kits, because that is a major issue all across the country. Like, there's actually a big problem with backlogs and kits not being properly managed for and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I think I mentioned on the first episode we talked about how, like, there's been a lot of legislation to try to address this, but obviously not everywhere and not universally. And, you know, legislation also has to be enacted, like implemented. You have to follow the police have to go and follow the law and all that.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah, Dana does not, you know, you don't get on Dana's bad side without cause. I'll say that.
Right.
You gotta really mess up. Like, notice she's not one of the people piling onto Javadi.
Mm.
She's not one of the people who's just like, you made a mistake, an honest mistake, and bad things happen, but we're gonna fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other people are like, Nepo baby.
Oh yeah, we gotta talk about Garcia in a little bit. The other thing that I really wanted to make sure that we touched on that I completely missed last week was the conversation between Dr. King and Dr. Ellis.
Ah, Mellis.
Yeah, yes. We're not shipping them, so don't worry. That for a lot of neurodivergent folks, breaking the rules is like a really deeply uncomfortable thing, or breaking the rules or bending the, you know, like there's a... and it actually has some distinctions, like, so we can talk about it, that there's something called justice sensitivity and pattern violation stress, which leads to dysregulation. And that for some neurodivergent people, the clear and consistent rules are how they make sense of the world, and they really depend on those rules being in place and being followed. And when the rules are inconsistently applied or there is some challenge to them, it can read, for their nervous system, it can read like a threat, not just like a minor annoyance that somebody else might experience. In contrast, they have Dr. Ellis, who's mad that the patients are trying to bend the system and punish the doctors, right, for what they did. And so when we look at this question of justice sensitivity, and I doubt that the writers necessarily had this in mind, but more power to them if they had actually intentionally put this issue here. Mel is being affected by, hey, we're not supposed to talk about the case. This is a violation of the rules. But Dr. Ellis is like, this is a violation of some social justice stuff here, and I'm going to call this bullshit out, and I have to say what I have to say because my sense of justice is being violated here.
Right.
Because we as doctors were trying to save a patient's life and not, you know, follow a bunch of kook science stuff. So I just thought it was really interesting, the contrast between Mel, Dr. King, and Dr. Ellis, and how they're both approaching and dealing with this same situation. And when we have a neurodivergent character and a Black woman character, both questioning things around justice and rules and organization and how things, I think it's just a fascinating a little facet of sociology in life. So,
yeah, it's tough, right? You don't want to keep people from seeking justice, but frivolous lawsuits do happen.
Right.
And it adds not just to the liability for doctors, but the costs for patients too.
Right. And it's an important part of this, our regulation of system, that there be some kind of redress, because there is malpractice. There is medical malpractice. There is making the coffee at the fast food restaurant too hot. Right?
Yep. So, exactly.
You know, we need ways of doing that, but then at the same time, you know, and that's what part of the legal system is, right? To adjudicate those things. So,
right.
But questions of just what is justice and whose justice it is, like, we really have to stay present to these things and try to understand how people are affected by these things and be present to that.
Right. Well, We'll see how Mel's deposition goes.
Yes, we will.
Who knows? Who knows? She's you know, she made sure to take her 15-minute break beforehand, right. And that went really well.
Yeah, right, as things generally go in the emergency department. We did get a couple pieces of feedback, but maybe we'll take a quick break.
Sounds as a suggestion, good.
And then we'll come back and we'll read those.
We'll see you then.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
And we are back, and we've got a couple pieces of feedback. Again, ptmc@thelorehounds.com. We got an email from Aaron, who is one of the hosts of the Radioactive Ramblers. And John, you and Aaron, and who's your third on this?
Richard.
Richard, thank you. Have a new project in the works.
We do.
It's an interesting crossover between this show and what you're about to cover, but you want to give a quick plug while we're here anyway?
Yeah, sure. We're in June. We're going to be starting Cosmere Corner, which is a big read-along. It's going to be a 5-year read-along of all the works of Brandon Sanderson related to the Cosmere. So if you've heard that those shows are coming to Apple TV, you will be seeing a Stormlight Archive show and before that, Mistborn movies. So we want to get everybody read up on everything, just like we did with the Second Age with the Lorehounds.
Nice. Going back to the roots.
Yeah. And it's going to be video. It's very exciting.
Ooh, wow. Scary.
I know. Anyway. It is genuinely scary. I just have to be honest.
Cool. Well, Aaron wrote in. So anyway, we have an email from Aaron, and then we have an email from our chief medical correspondent, Sarah Z. And she wrote in a very long email with a lot of great information. So we'll tackle both of these. But I just was thinking about, do you remember Marta?
Yes.
John, our chief Italian correspondent, we were covering the White Lotus. And then and there was another medical professional I thought that we had. Was she a maternity related to? And she was in Ireland.
It was
or something?
A nurse.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm just thinking back to all the many years.
We get these resident correspondents during different seasons.
Yep. Yeah. And it's just awesome. And it was just like, oh, I miss Marta. I wish we were having something to do with Italian culture that we could talk to her again. So anyway, just a fun remembrance. But here's an email from Aaron. Hey, Laura Hound's been loving the new season of The Pit in coverage. I was listening to the conversation on how Gen Z's relationship to substances is different from other generations and thought I'd throw my two cents in as part of that generation. Well, first off, Aaron, I don't think you have 2 cents to throw to us anymore because they've stopped making the penny. And I don't know that you'll ever have to count pennies when you're closing out the till at the end of the night at the coffee shop or anything. That said, Aaron continues, there's absolutely less drinking with Gen Z. And there is certainly a large contingent of people who just don't drink at all for any number of economic and or social factors. But another aspect of that is the legalization of marijuana in a lot of places, which has overtaken alcohol in popularity among Gen Z, with roughly 60 to 70% of 18 to 24-year-olds reporting that they prefer it. As for the nicotine question, it's extremely prevalent. Big tobacco may have lost the millennials at large, but hooked the Gen Zs with vaping.
It's terrible. We were the only generation who was safe for some reason.
Right, the millennials. Yeah, you've shot right through the donut hole. Right, exactly. Many of whom started as kids and have transitioned into heavy smokers as young adults. This is by no means a judgment of anyone's habits, just a thought. Just thought the conversation on generational differences is pretty interesting. Best, Aaron K. Thoughts, additional thoughts about that?
I mean, I've heard this plenty of times, right?
Yeah.
By the way, we haven't talked about how, you know, Nancy writes a lot of our second breakfast posts and things like that. Was she like unaware of the term millennial? I've never encountered this before. Like, right. I've like in an academic setting heard us referred to as Gen Y. But I've never, but like millennial has been the prevailing generational term for like 15 years now.
I don't know. Maybe it relates to the remoteness of her living location.
They have
millennials in Canada.
They do have millennials in Canada, but
they had hipsters. They definitely had hipsters. So we'll have to find out more. Maybe just missed it. Anyway, would you mind starting off Sarah Z's email?
Absolutely.
Because it's very, I think we're going to have to break it up because it is, she unpacks a lot of information for us. So,
sure.
And Sarah Z, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to write in such a wonderful email.
So. Agreed. All right. Sarah says, and she's our chief medical correspondent. Hello, John and David. I decided to email you this time because I'm bad at Discord. I heard my name. It's like the bat signal. Haha. I think this last week you guys asked about training for electronic medical records not working. And honestly, it's not all that much different than they are portraying in the show.
That's terrifying.
We have a Rubbermaid-like tote with all the paper we need to chart and some resource guides. And we rely on the people that have actually done paper charting. I'm dating myself, but I'm one of those people. We actually do still have a fax machine and currently use it to request blood from the blood bank. Don't ask me why.
HIPAA.
The most training you get is when there are scheduled downtimes when they are updating something in the system, which 9 times out of 10 screws something else up. These are usually scheduled for the middle of the night and last 1 to 4 hours. And honestly, most of us try to chart as much as possible before downtime and then back chart when the system comes back up. This will be hell for the pit when they get their computers back, because for this record to be complete, everything done during the outage will have to be entered into the electronic medical record by hand.
Dear God.
During downtime, we do have access to a read-only version of the chart, but if they took everything offline, you wouldn't have that. Basically, it would suck and probably be chaos.
Like, where's the Rubbermaid tote? Who moved the Rubbermaid tote?
Right.
You know, like, you're screwed if somebody goes and monkeys with the storage room.
It's all over.
Yeah.
It's all over.
Madness.
As far as just an electrical outage, most hospitals have generators that automatically kick in after a few seconds. They test these monthly to make sure they work properly. Everything life-saving gets plugged into red outlets that are powered by the generators. Think ventilators, operating room equipment. I think the other question you asked about was midline catheters. Great.
Do you want me to read this?
Yeah, yeah. You go catheters. I'm not a big catheter fan.
All right. You can cover the IT stuff. Okay. So there are several types of lines we can put in you to gain IV access for meds and fluids. Most common would be peripheral IV. These are short, 1 to 2 inches. Get placed in the veins of your hand, wrist, forearm, inside your elbow, etc. They come in various gauges. Surfacing over some of the details, John. Thank you. Yeah, to save your precious constitution. typically, EMS or the emergency department will put in a larger gauge because you can run fluid at a higher rate. And because it's peripheral, there are certain caustic meds that can't be run through this line. These lines typically last 1 to 4 days, and they're put in by EMS or a nurse. Midline catheter, this is still considered a peripheral IV, comes in different sizes, usually placed with an ultrasound and into one of the two larger veins inside your elbow. This is threaded into the vein so that the tip of the line terminates around the armpit area. Again, because it's peripheral, certain meds can't run through it. And this line can last 1 to 4 weeks, and it's got to be inserted by a specially trained nurse. A PICS line, peripherally inserted central catheter, is a line usually inserted into one of the two large veins on the inside of your elbow and threaded up to the superior vena cava. just above the right atrium of the heart. These lines are long, and I'm skipping a bunch of stuff, and they're placed by ultrasound guidance or fluoroscopes. Through some very cool medical terminology stuff. These are central lines. They sit in a large vessel, so you can run caustic meds through them, and you can draw blood for lab work. These lines usually have 2 to 3 lumens inside them and can stay in for months, and patients can go home with them, often used for long-term antibiotic administration. And they can be placed by a specially trained nurse or by an MD. Fluoroscopy? Is that what maybe with the little cameras?
Yeah, it sounds like you're putting a light somewhere.
Right.
Central, please don't put it certain places.
Central lines. These are large lines inserted into the large vessels. Jugular, blah, 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 a bunch of, you know, where you got big veins here. I'm skipping stuff for John's sake. These lines are very long.
It's all right. You can read it.
Okay. They come
she
in.
She put the work into it.
Yeah, she did. And I appreciate that. They come in various gauges that are much bigger, and they're placed under ultrasound guidance into large vessels and threaded into the superior vena cava just above the heart. For jugular or subclavian and inferior vena cava above the level diagram, for femoral, these lines typically have multiple lumens inside, all in one. So maybe it's like more, maybe there's multiple tubes inside the tube, is what I'm understanding. You can put caustic meds through these because they are in such large vessels, draw blood from them to stay in the lab, and they can stay 2 to 4 weeks. And are placed in ICU patients because of the ability to give more meds through them. And they have to be inserted by a trained physician, an NP or a PA. And there are even more sub-categories to these things. Let's see here. Do we want to talk about this bone marrow saw thing?
I think All right. I'm cutting it off there. You can blame me.
Yeah, she did say that we had permission to edit her on this, so it's okay. I realize that this is a really long explanation. Here it is. Feel free to not use edit as much as you want. If you have any questions on the latest episode, feel free to email back or call me out on the podcast. Thanks for the coverage and all that you guys do. It's such a great job and such a great community. Chief medical correspondent, Nerdy Nurse Sarah.
Thank you, Amazing. Nerdy Nurse Sarah. I'm sorry I'm squeamish.
It was really, really interesting though, and I actually learned a lot. So yeah. I appreciate that.
I learned a lot. perhaps too much.
Too much
at certain points. Again, there's reasons I didn't even think about pursuing medicine. Like there was never a time that I in my life was like I might go into the medical field. Mm-hmm. I knew from a very young kid like I can't handle this.
Can't do that. Right? I've done a lot of first aid. I had a first responder certification at one time, but I was never, really good at it. But it takes a lot of training and a lot of practice. You can learn skills in the classroom, but you really have to have a lot of guidance and mentorship, which means that bad stuff has to happen to people for you to use your skills. It's kind of this weird paradox that law enforcement and EMS.
I mean, bad stuff does happen to people. So
exactly.
It's not like it's not happening.
But you're like, oh, I want to, try out my new high angle rappelling, rescue and use this thing. Well, that means a car's got to go over a cliff, right? If you want to do that. So
right.
It's kind of a weird thing.
No, my father was an EMT for many years. So
was he? I didn't know that.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Cool.
So.
All right. Should we talk about, who do we want to talk about?
Santos? Well, you got Santos first.
Okay.
So, she's interesting. Oh, we shouldn't get child services involved. Well, Santos, I think Robbie has a point there. You were pretty quick to try to call them in when you had no facts earlier.
I think they're really setting her up to be time for a peds residency for Dr. Santos. She can sing
every person who comes into her office is going to get a welfare check afterward. They're going to put it together eventually. No, I'm kidding. Look, she's been through it, and it is good that she has a sense for this, right? It does seem like she was right in the season one situation, and it's better for her to be right. It's better for Well, I don't even want to say it's better for her to be wrong sometimes, because it does, if she is wrong, that does like tear apart, that could potentially tear apart a family.
Yeah.
It's she's gotta calibrate a little bit.
Yeah. I appreciate that, because as a young person, you want people who are eager and leaning into it to be able to learn. And then that's why you have people who have experience and have been around, like a Robbie, to teach and balance and wisdom. And you really get the sense that her sense of justice around children is really highly, I don't want to say she's not attuned to it, but it's there, right? She has an instant response to want to take care of young people.
Yeah, she does. And she wants to be taken care of.
That's by true.
Garcia.
We'll get there in a second. I just wanted to call out the one thing that when she is working with, what's his name? Young Jude. That he says, oh, like, I don't want to see it when you take off the bandage. So she says, look at me. And as they're doing that, Santos is, the little bulb for a blood pressure cuff. She's, this little squeezy thing, to mm-hmm. inflate the blood pressure cuff. She's got that in one hand. He reaches out with his hand, grabs her hand that has that bulb in it. She drops the bulb. So she stops doing the medical procedure that she's supposed to do. And she takes his hand, and you see there's this little juggling of them, their hands getting into position to be able to hold them. And she holds onto his hand affirmatively. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh man.
She's very gentle when she needs to be.
And she tells Jude the truth. She doesn't sugarcoat it, but she doesn't, just not dooming it, but she's also not lying to him, right? So she has respect for him. It's just, her personal life may be in a different state, but the way that she relates to kids and in these circumstances, I really appreciate.
Is he going to be a concert pianist? Maybe not.
Okay. All right.
He can still do a lot of stuff.
He still has appropriate fingers.
The important ones are there, they said, right?
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you my grandpa's favorite story about how fireworks injured his friend as a kid in the 1940s?
I don't think you've told this story.
I have to bring it in now. It's appropriate.
Yeah, it's relative.
So he was a little shit in Brooklyn in the 1940s, mm-hmm. and his friend put a lit firecracker in his back pocket. He said, it's got a really long fuse. And
friend's back pocket?
No. His friend put it in his own pocket.
Right. Yeah. His friend. Okay. Yeah.
And he climbed a telephone pole to try mm-hmm. to get high with it. And it went off in his butt pocket. And he lost a large chunk of his buttocks.
Wow. There you go.
And so don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. don't mess around with fireworks.
And who knows
what they had in the 1940s in Brooklyn.
Right. And you know the other thing that you shouldn't do? Inappropriate relationships in the workplace. That's the other thing you should not be doing.
I mean, I mentioned earlier, there is the beat over because it's not in the chain of command. Is it unethical? It's probably like a frowned upon, but not strictly disallowed relationship because they're not in the same chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think HR is going to get involved in this one unless there's a hostile workplace. And, there could be a hostile workplace at one point. I could see both of them creating one.
Well, and this is where Garcia should be as the older, more experienced person in the relationship, she should be Garcia in this episode does two things pretty hard. One, is whatever. Oh, I made other plans, right? A, you're in a relationship with somebody you probably shouldn't be. And then B, you juke them a little bit, right? You're like, oh, we're keeping it casual.
But do we know that this is a relationship, or is this something where Santos would like it to be a relationship and
Santos has more feeling, and Garcia should be the one here in the position of going, this isn't healthy for you. This is, and we should cut this off now.
Let's keep it profesh.
Yes.
I agree. That is a Garcia problem though.
Yeah. This is a Garcia problem. I think Garcia's she's rough and tumble, right? But yeah. So surgeons are such this way. But what a gut punch, you know, standing in the elevator door there. She goes away. Keep it casual, right? You're like, oh, that's okay. Ugh,
it's yikes. It's a big yikes.
It's yucky.
Yep.
Let's talk about Mel, Becca, and Langdon. I have to claim some internet points because I did call out that I thought Becca was going to end up in the emergency room.
Yes, and you did. You did. I remember that.
Yes.
Congratulations. What will you be spending them on?
I don't know. Probably 5 minutes of extra sleep tonight, given that we sprung forward. I don't know.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I want to reserve one of the examination rooms in the back where I can just wall off the curtain for, so I can get a power nap before our next podcast.
We have seen though in season one, we saw Langdon being really good with neurodivergent.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And I think that we see this now with Becca, right? He's like, it is normal, but we still have to fix it. Like she needed him to say that, right? This is not something crazy. And I was really glad to see the continuation of that.
Right. And he's just treating her like a person, right? And he's like, same that you would treat with any patient care. Autonomy, respect, natural language, you know, working with the person confidently, addressing their concerns and their fears, being present to them, right? That's a big part of care. So
can I also say Robbie is, I'm going to call hypocrite alert on him. Mm-hmm. Oh, you shouldn't be caring for your sister. You can't be level-headed. I'm like, did I not watch you sacrifice like 10 other lives for your not son's girlfriend last season?
Yep.
Did you not fail to call it on your former boss because he was your mentor? Like, dude, you are the last person to talk about keeping a level head around people you know.
Do as I say, not as I do is a very famous,
right. There, it's the Robbie mantra.
Yeah, for sure. But I just love, I do love the Langdon Mel, you know, mutual fan club. And, you know, Becca's just like, oh, I know who you are.
Yeah.
So
also Robbie is nosy. He keeps peeking in on everybody.
Yeah. He was creeping outside the room there and giving like a really hard stare at Langdon, the back of Langdon's head. I actually took a screenshot of that in the Discord. I was like, bro, like, what is your problem? Like, it's simple. I think it's going to be a urinary tract infection, right? That's what it sounded like.
But I also love when originally Robbie goes to assign Becca to Santos and Mel goes, not in R2. Called out.
Yes. Very funny.
Santos doesn't even seem to take offense. He's like, yeah, all right, fine. I think she was kind of just like, whatever, one less patient for my chart.
Right. And she's still freaked out about having to repeat a year because she's not up on her charts. But it sounds like everybody does that and has to do charting afterwards.
This is a very common thing. I talk to my aunt, who's a nurse all the time. And she's like, yeah, I'm staying late. I got a chart. Mm. It's tough.
And they don't build it into their shift, right? You're like, you go
they
off
do not
shift
build it into the shift. You just don't
That's
get paid.
Bullshit. It's unpaid labor. Paid.
Yep.
That's bullshit.
Absolutely
just
it is.
Straight up bullshit.
And these are largely for-profit corporations.
Nah,
not giving you enough time. Dog.
Yep. They can go kick rocks for that. That's wrong.
Welcome to healthcare in America.
Yeah, I'm offended.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Are we a lot of things, but it doesn't seem to be helping. So no, I'm trying to chill out a little bit.
should we be offended that Princess had some insider information about?
Naughty, 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 naughty. How much to keep, how much for you to keep quiet?
Or was it Perla? Or was it Princess?
I think Princess had the inside information Perla wanted.
Perla got cut in. Cut.
Yeah.
40%, dog. Woo. That was a lot of money, too.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of money. Honestly, fair.
Yeah. Was it 1,000? He said he said your grand prize, and I was was that like a wordplay? Like here's your
I didn't read it as that, but
okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
The Ogilvy redemption arc starts here.
No, it does not. I there was nothing redeeming in this. He basically said, I hate you the same way I hate my dad. That's what he said.
He treated him fairly. He delivered good patient care. He didn't say anything inappropriate to him.
So are the standards for white men that low? Like if you don't actively insult the patient,
basically,
then you're doing a good job. No, no. Ogilvy is still on my shit list. I said on our Discord the other day, I was like, I get one free hate pass per show and I'm using mine on Ogilvy.
Right. Fair enough. I do think that they are going to start his redemption arc from here, though. So, because we did see an insight into his life that there is some issue between him and his father. And then this patient reminded him a little bit of his father. And so we got, just like with Joy, they gave us a little insight into her family history. And, you know, that started her redemption arc. So I'm just
But Joy didn't ever do anything wrong.
She was like, why am I here? What's going on?
She didn't bother me. She was just trying to figure it out. She's not a morning person.
Oh, my God.
I'm good with it. Okay. Joy never bothered me. I never hated Joy. Ogilvy should kick rocks. All the rocks. All right. All the rocks in the ER. May you walk in front of Ogilvy's foot.
Well, can we agree that Nick from radiology doesn't have to kick any rocks?
Why not?
He's cute. He's a cute radiologist.
Oh.
What? Did you watch the same episode as I did?
I guess so. All right.
I mean, Princess certainly thinks he's, and Javadi are both making goo-goo eyes at him.
That's right. He was also accommodating when they had to chase him down to get the CT.
No, that was actually the tech. There was a junior tech.
Oh, it wasn't him?
Yeah.
Sorry, I conflated the two characters then.
He was clearly, Dr. Nick is clearly over his head, though, because he's like, he didn't even think about the fact that they could just take the images off on a thumb drive. And so interesting, Robbie, anti-AI Robbie guy here, he knew all about the tech. Couldn't we just download these and look on them on a terminal? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty smart right there, guy.
I mean, that's quite not AI, right? That's just tech. That's just a human using the tech. Right. I mean, AI isn't really AI in the end, right? It's really just a branding thing.
Right, it is. It really is just like 4G, right? Yeah, it's just branding bullshit. So, what?
I'm just gonna say I don't think Nick left as big of an impression on my heart as he did yours. Okay. So I'm shipping you and Nick
or Javadi.
Javadi, poor Javadi. I mean, I will say this is the best part of this scene is that Whitaker does not throw her under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Is Whitaker, when asked what happened, Whitaker says, we did not put it on the chart. Mm-hmm. We did not have it on the chart and there was a delay. He, you know, that's something that, you know, I've learned about in writing classes is you use passive language when you want to not assign blame to anybody.
Mm.
There was a delay. That's what he said. Not Javadi messed it up. Javadi delayed it.
And they were signaling, at least last episode, if not the episode before, that Javadi was having sort of trouble wrapping her brain around.
Spending too much time as Dr. J on TikTok.
She's doing too many TikToks and not enough time figuring out how the charting system works. And I love the way that they're just like, it works like this, you guys. And everybody's like, huh? It's like you put the triplicate form here and then you take a sticker and you put it there and then you leave the chart over here and you know, and the nurses are running zone and you're just like, what is going on? I totally have empathy for Javadi, but she did
absolutely
fuck up. But she did fuck up.
Did she fuck up? Did that really negatively affect somebody's life?
Yes. And that's the stakes of being a doctor, right?
Right. And that like it or not, that probably was malpractice, right? Like, that's malpractice. We have Mel testifying, but I think it's going to be Javadi next. At the same time, like, that's also what malpractice insurance is for. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes something's going to fall through the cracks, probably.
Yeah.
They're human beings still.
Yes.
Especially in an emergency situation like this.
Right. And then there's sort of the chaos of it all. And, but that's the stakes is that as an ED staff member, you have to show up every day on top of your game.
Right.
And you can't let stuff like that throw you.
Right.
Because you know that she's got to turn around and deliver the next patient. She needs to deliver the best care she can for that next patient. Right. And the one after that and the one after that. And like they all do.
Right.
I don't think I could work. I could never do this job.
Oh, I don't think so either.
God.
I need some kind of like ebb and flow at work. I can't just be like on all of it.
No.
Poor Javadi. I really do feel badly for her because, like you say, it's like it's a mistake anybody could have made.
And Garcia's comment to like shout, you know, to say "Nepo baby." Like, I get it, you're upset, but I also think that
was unfair.
That's a little toxic workplace kind of situation.
Exactly, and that's why I'm like not really a Garcia fan at all, especially this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I She's very cocky. She's very cocky. Miss I am the OR.
That's right. Somebody who's not cocky is Dr. Mohan. And
I waited too long.
Her eggs. Tick tock. Let's go.
And in an episode where we're threatening an ovary, right?
Yes. Very good point. And we're thinking about Dr. Abbott doing naked yoga. Like, it's all very confusing. It's all very confusing.
We assume he's virile, right?
Monica Peters. I guess somebody called out the fact that she's wearing her scrub, her jacket thing is a very 90s coded. Like, somebody went and found a lab coat from the 90s and have her wearing that as a way to signify that she's like this old school, you know, from a bygone era, because scrubs don't look like that anymore. But apparently they did at that time.
She'll go, hold on, I'm going to restart that sentence. They'll go, hey, Monica, we got a new uniform for you. No, you didn't.
She just look at you.
Yeah.
There's a call out for Sarah. Sarah, what is the state of play for medical dress? Stylistic changes, material changes, functional changes, like pockets in different places and things like that. I think remember in season one, there was the whole thing about the machine, getting the different uniforms out of the machine, and Whitaker kept getting like the wrong things. And
yeah, so he was wearing capris for a little while, and then he was wearing the wrong color. That was a good running gag.
Is that really a thing, that machine? Because that's like, seems like some insane, that's like kind of like cameras tracking you at when you're a barista and how many coffee shots you've pulled or something like that. That's some like over the top bean counter bullshit to me. So
it is pretty bad.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So Robbie and Abbott, you're not feeling very good about Robbie's. Do you have any thoughts about Robbie's trajectory?
I think he's contemplating suicide.
You think so?
Absolutely. Actively.
Okay.
He's literally like, I mean, what is Abbott saying? Like, when it gets dark, not if it gets dark, right? Mm. When it gets dark, you got to call me. And then he doesn't even say, yeah, he just like pats him on the shoulder again.
Right.
And he doesn't even do the joking one on his bullet wound. Mm-hmm. He does like a genuine shoulder pat.
Right.
I'm very worried about that. I'm very worried about his conversation with Whitaker, where he's like, if I don't come back, you know, you got a sweet bachelor pad. I think Robbie is considering not coming back.
That comment is definitely a weird comment. You're like, what do you mean if I don't come back? You know, and he was like, oh, no, I meant if I don't come back to PTMC, right? It's like, no, dude, you, that's a, yeah, that comment has no, a that's lot your of ambiguity. House. Yeah, exactly. It's your house, not your job. So.
Right. It's not like, you can take my office while I'm gone. And if I don't come back, you'll have an office. That's a different thing.
Right. The conversation that Dana was having with Emma out in the driveway area there. They didn't rack focus, but they definitely left a lot of negative space. So Dana was way frame left, I think. And so we could clearly see the lineup of the motorcycle parking. And there are several motorcycles parked over there. And the first one is Robbie's motorcycle. And they gave us a long look at the end of that conversation. So, yeah, they were like, boop, 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 signaling us that, you know, this topic is a lively one. It's active.
Yeah. It's a motorcycle season. How do you feel about Whitaker's relationship? Do you think it's ethical? Do you think he's being taken advantage of?
Because
Robbie kind of implies both ways, right? He's like, hey, maybe it's not ethical for you. Like, maybe you're taking advantage of this woman, but also maybe she's taking advantage of you. And I like that he forces him to have a boundary here. He's like, no kids, yours or others.
right. And he's like, I'm not done. Sit down. I'm still talking to you, because Whitaker kept trying to get up and go away. I think Robbie's got the right of it. I think he's, and I think he delivered it well. I think he handled that from a human resource sort of thing. I think it felt appropriate to me.
Yeah.
you know, he's addressing both sides of that. You're like, yeah, you're kind of taking advantage of her, but she's kind of taking advantage of you, and it's a weird situation, and it's your heart's in the right place, but
yeah,
this isn't.
But this is a codependency sandwich, and
yeah,
we just you need to take a step away.
Yeah, and when things escalate to somewhere else, I don't know, it's weird. So I think he handled it properly.
Yeah,
but Whitaker got his doctor badge.
He did. That was nice.
Yeah,
that was nice to see.
Pretty cool.
You could just call me Whitaker. Not a chance.
All right. Well, let's take another break, and then we'll just we'll come back. We'll round up with the patients and talk about a couple of the other themes and topics that were in this episode. And we are back. Any more notes on Jude Augustine? That was the young man who blew his fingers off and whose parents have been deported by Immigration Customs Enforcement.
You know, we had heard that there was going to be an ICE storyline.
Yeah.
And that it was going to be quote unquote balanced because of the network's desires. So far, I would call this, you know, I mean, to me, that's balanced. This is factually what's happening right now. I know that a lot of people probably will not feel like it's balanced because it perhaps favors a certain political argument. But yeah, it's tragic. And there's a lot of people losing their parents right now to deportation.
Yeah.
And people who have done nothing wrong other than seek a new home.
I felt that they didn't treat this storyline differently from any other storyline that they've treated.
Yeah.
You know, be it mass shootings, be it branding, whatever, you know, just they just sort of dealt with it pretty straight. And I thought that the social worker, I really appreciated his perspective. Dylan Easton is his name. That he's like, yeah, they're probably, you know, they need to check up on him. And she knows she needs some help. She needs some extra resources, right? She's not prepared for this.
Right. Even if they don't make the kid go back to Haiti.
Yeah.
Or go to Haiti rather, because he's never been there.
Right.
Even if they don't make the kid. Yeah. Right. Even if they don't make the kid go to Haiti, she clearly needs extra resources.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. And like she said, she's doing the best she can, and it's hard. And she had a trajectory of her life that is now interrupted because of some stupid policy bullshit, right?
Right, because of a political concern.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where they were following the rules, they went to their assigned appointment like they're supposed to, and
right.
They're suddenly changed the way things are doing for a political reason, not for a policy reason.
Well, that's exactly why I tell people who say they're not political that, you know, you can pretend like that, but
yeah.
It's not a game. It's people's lives.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about Becca, so I think we're done there. Brooke McCord, she's the one that had the eye stroke. I'm just glad she's going to the ICU because then they're going to have that nurse patient ratio that's really high. So she's going to get a lot of attention, but I'm nervous for her. And maybe I'm just nervous because I trust these writers, but you know, I still maybe am conditioned for too many medical or too much drama, manufactured drama in television shows.
I mean, they did make a pretty big deal out of signing that waiver.
Yes.
And I'm a little concerned here.
Yeah.
But she did sign the informed consent waiver. Like that's a pretty good CYA for.
Yeah.
You know.
And she's getting, you know, good results, but then I'm just nervous about what's going to happen. So at least she's going to be in the ICU. I'm happy for that.
Keep the crash cart close by.
That's right. What are your thoughts on Roxy?
Obviously a very personal case to me. It's very sad. Was the line a little bit cheesy?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I've never died before.
I was like, oh, all right. That's a little, you know, every now and then the show really like, you know, hams it up a little too much for me. I think that was a moment for me, but I did appreciate. And again, this is one of the most fantastical parts of the show is that McKay sits and talks to her for a minute and doesn't just go, you good? You need anything? Okay, I got to go to my other patient.
Right.
You know, I've never ever been in a hospital where that you get that level of care.
Right. Right.
And I mean like emotional care.
Right. 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 In a busy city that has where the lobby is overflowing with patients on a busy holiday weekend, and she takes 5 minutes to sit with her to have an emotional conversation.
Yep.
Do you ever, your kids ever jump on you when you really don't want them to?
Absolutely, they do.
And then
they jump on your stomach and you feel like you're going to throw up because they just jump so hard. They don't realize how big they are.
Yeah.
And then you just go.
So when her son jumps on the bed next to her with ice cream, I was just like, and you can't say no, right? You're just like, yeah, it's like my kid loves me, but damn it, that hurt or it's not comfortable. So. Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah,
we already talked about Javadi's patient and Mr. Digby. Any thoughts on Howard?
It's just Digby.
Mr. Digby.
I'm saying that's what he said. He goes, it's just Digby. That was, I think, two episodes ago or something.
Right.
Howard, I mean, it seems like, and you know, you see this a lot, especially with people who are struggling with weight. They feel like, or with a disability, they feel like they have to hide from their loved ones rather than having an open relationship. Because when she hears from him, she seems overjoyed to hear from him.
Yeah.
And it also, it sounds like there was some kind of unpleasant dynamic with their parents, right?
Yeah.
Based on what she said. And it sounds
their
like
father she, and drinking. Yeah.
Right. It sounds like she needed to get away from that, but she didn't consider that maybe she didn't need to get away from all of it. She could have maintained a tie.
Right.
And that's tough too. And I've witnessed that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I appreciate this, just the way that they're treating Howard, you know, and they're like, you're going to die, but we're going to take you out to talk to your sister for 5 minutes in the air conditioned ambulance bay. And I think Abbott, you know, there was a moment where he's on the phone with his sister and he's, I think Abbott's really moved. Like he's really vested in this guy and in this relationship. There was like this little look that he had and I was like, oh damn, this patient's getting to him.
So. I think Abbott is going to be this guy's personal trainer afterwards.
Naked yoga.
He's going to show up in the nude. Like, let's get to work, Howard.
Let's go, Howard. But yeah, nervous for Howard. I mean, that's a tough odds. And that's a lot of work that they have to do in surgery to do this without complicating the situation.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they got to get in there, right? They got to figure out, they got to get into that hole and stop that hole, plug that hole up. So
again, I've lived some of this, you know, my father, mm-hmm. I've been a proxy where I talked to the doctor and they said, your father's not going to survive a surgery with his weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Jesus,
I've been there.
So on the mid-season check-in, we were talking with John and all three of us, but John particularly, he had some also personal relations to this story. This show just like unexpectedly reaches out into all of our lives in different ways. And there's like real connections. Like I've used a Hoyer lift before. Like I've, you know, you've got a lot of connections. You were just in an emergency room a couple of weeks ago as well. Right.
Everybody gets sick. Like, everybody gets sick and everybody gets old.
Yeah. And this show just reaches into all of our lives. And it's really interesting the way that the storylines cross from the screen and into our lives. So. A couple themes and topics. I mean, obviously, medical companies making urgent medical decisions because I think it was Mr. Garcia. I have to look at the patient list. The guy who came back from the other hospital with the open shoulder wound. And
I don't think that was Garcia. That was somebody else. I don't remember the name.
Yeah. I can look it up. But any thoughts about that topic?
I mean, why are we going back and forth? This is just ridiculous. I truly hate the American healthcare system. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. We didn't get too much on that this episode, so I don't think we have to go too deep into it.
No. I'm just trying to find the patient name, too, but there's a lot of patients, so
Yeah.
Be interesting to see the patient statistics at the end of that. Mr. Diaz. No. Mr. Diaz was diabetic.
Right.
Yeah. He was from before. Anyway, it's not that important. It's in the list somewhere. Man, episode one. Yeah, we had a lot of patients in episode one. They overloaded us. Anyway, okay, moving on.
Well, let's talk about furries.
We can talk about furries. I was going to talk about polycystic ovarian syndrome. Really,
furries.
Okay. Do you want to talk?
We'll do picos afterwards. I need to get you know. I need a lighter topic for a minute.
Okay. Fair enough. Did you? So you didn't know anything about Anthrocon?
I mean, I know what a furry is.
Okay. But you didn't know that 15 to 20,000 people descend on Pittsburgh every year.
No idea that this was a real thing in Pittsburgh. Like, I like that they're using these actual local events too. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, made up for, oh, this is just a thing that happens in Pittsburgh. You're like, that doesn't actually happen in Pittsburgh.
Right.
I mean, good for them. You like what you like, right? I mean,
it's huge.
But at the same time, like, can we not do the furry con in July? Right. Can we do that in spring or fall or even winter? I mean, I get winter for like travel issues, but spring or fall, guys, like you can't be doing this in the heat of July. Also, why is it on the 4th of July?
Right. Yeah. I think the date floats a little bit, but it's always sort of around this time.
So. That is ridiculous. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Why do we put ourselves as humans in these situations where we're in heat boxes in the heat?
Yeah, crazy. I guess it started in about 97 and then bounced around a little bit. It started in 97 in Albany. I guess it was where the first one. And then it settled in Pittsburgh in about 2006. And it's a big deal. Yeah, the whole town, it's like it's become a cornerstone of the business cycle for the town, for the city every year. And obviously brings in a lot of revenue for the shops and the restaurants and everything. And people decorate and there's a big parade and whatnot. And from what I was reading about it, there's been like there are furry, what do you want to say? Our representative from Anthrocon saying that it's a lot about identity and community, and it's a very artistic and creative community, and it's not inherently a thing about sex or sexuality, and that's just part of it. But like, if you go to Comic-Con, there's lots of sex, and if you go to SCA,
I'm not begrudging anyone their fur.
Not at all. Not at
you
all.
You wear what you want to wear. Open armpits or something like that. Right. You know what I mean? I'm trying to innovate here.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there's liquid cooling systems and fans. I'm sure.
That's honestly very important. Maybe they have the, what is it? The Arctic Sun? They have the Arctic Sun within the furry suit.
Very good. I think you should do some research, John, and get back to us.
I'm not putting that anywhere in my Google history.
Yeah, your wife would be like,
also, my ads will never recover.
Yeah, that's right. All the banner ads popping up. Yeah.
My phone's probably listening to me right now. And like, right. I'm going to get Anthrocon ads.
You're hosed.
Yeah, I'm done. So are you.
Yeah, I think I'm past the demographic a little bit for furry. So I don't need to build a fursona.
I don't think they discriminate.
That's true. You could be an older furry. It'd be fine.
I mean, who's going to know? You're in the suit.
That's a good point. I don't know how many. I would like to do a demographic poll of furries because I don't think there'll be a lot of Gen Xers in there. I just don't think that we're built for that kind of stuff.
So, I don't know. I've not done the research.
Look, if you're a Gen Xer and you're a furry, write in and prove me wrong.
Where's our furry correspondent?
Yeah, where is our furry
correspondent? Our furrespondent.
Right. I did love the little joke that the patient Bill of Rights thing was useless. Somebody out in the chairs was like, this thing's useless.
Which honestly just tramples on my theory that it was going to be what saved the paper day.
Right. It was a good theory. I liked it.
I thought it was going to be fun.
Yeah. Dial a phone. Have you dialed a phone recently, John?
I mean...
A dial. No. It's round.
Can I tell you, though? Round. You know what? Here's something I can grab my gear on. I did used to... My dad had phones like that, the rotary phones. Sure. But I saw not even rotary, but like regular just old dial phones from like the 80s and 90s.
The push buttons,
in a thrift shop for like $40 the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you are out of your goddamn mind. $40 for a phone that nobody can use, that doesn't even look good, right? This is just a piece of plastic with a wire coming out of it.
Millions off of that, because those were all rented. You had to rent those phones. It was terrible.
Well, now you have to pay $40 for them in a
Shop. Well, now they've got you in another way, because
you're out of your mind. I'm not buying that.
Right.
I had like 10 of them that I got rid of when I cleaned out my dad's house.
That's funny. I brought that up because the wet read. So they gave us a little photography lesson there when Dr. Nick was like, what's a wet read? So I thought that was pretty funny. And I don't know if you saw the little look that Ahmed in security and Makeda from admin, who's a runner, she gave him a little wave. She picked up some slips. Yeah, I'm shipping them.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, he's interested. He's definitely interested. Should we talk about Picos and then we can get out of here?
I've known several people with Picos. I'm not unfamiliar with it, but but you've done the research, so.
I mean, I looked on the internet for some information about Picos. So. Look,
we use the word research in this society far too
liberally.
You know, yeah.
And I don't have ovaries, so it's not like I'm trying to speak authoritatively about any of this. I am simply, I just did some reading and then I'm just sort of returning some of that reading in audio form. Polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's a hormone disorder that affects up to 10 to 13% of people with ovaries. And it's a complex multi-genetic endocrine and metabolic disorder, which has environmental and genetic complicating factors. Apparently it's small fluid-filled follicles that don't regularly release eggs in the ovaries. I haven't had any personal interaction with PCOS, so it's hard for me to say anything more about
it. It's very painful. You can have hormonal issues. It's like, this is from people who I know who have had it. So I'm just relaying this. I don't have any medical background, but it can lead to some fertility issues. Not necessarily preventing you from having a kid, but it perhaps could be more difficult to conceive. Right. It's a tough thing to live with.
And when we talk about bias in the provision of care, and especially with women and especially with Black women, these sort of pregnancy related issues, they can be hard to diagnose and they sort of take time to resolve. And because of racial bias, racism and misogyny and cultural practices and all kinds of stuff, that for a lot of women of color, this is a very serious problem because they don't get the care that they normally should get. It's an issue. And I think there's a statistic that Black women die from pregnancy-related causes at 2 to 3 times the rate of white women, even for adjusted for income and education.
That is correct.
Like, that is a clear signal that there is something wrong and that needs to be addressed. And I think we are seeing that storyline being presented and played out to us. So,
yeah, it's a huge problem that people just aren't listening.
Yeah.
Black women especially.
Yeah. And I like that McKay, she's like, I mean, like that her, the ovary was twisting around and that sounds like it's happening intermittently. So they kept her for observation. So they were able to see it and catch it and understand what it is and attend to it. Where, you know, Whitaker unknowingly was like, oh, well, we can free up a bed space, right? She's good to go. And so this idea of how do you, provisioning of healthcare in a way that in a system that's not stressed. If it's not stressed, then we can attend to people. But because it is stressed, doctors have to make these decisions about bed space.
I think that's also, you know, part of this is she was smart enough to say, okay, if she had extreme pain in the lobby and it's less now, let's see if it comes back before sending her home and making her come back.
Right.
And again, like you say, it's an issue of provisioning and distributing healthcare resources when you have a full lobby.
And having a doctor who's actually taking a moment to be present to you and what you've got going on and not saying, oh, well, it's just period pain. Go home and take a Tylenol.
Right. Yikes. Well, she's lucky to have had McKay. We're lucky to have had this episode. I think that's all my thoughts for it.
I think we're covered. I think we're good.
All right. Very quickly, our outro.
Yes. What do we got? What's going on?
Alicia's Oscars coverage is wild. It's coming fast and loose. Maybe not loose. Fast and well-planned.
Yes.
And we're having a great time here. So check all that out on the main Lorehounds feed. You can also get catch up on A Night of the Seven Kingdoms we just finished.
Oh, just to hook back on the Oscars thing, I think the Oscars are coming up relative to, I think, next Sunday. And on the Discord, there will be folks chatting live while they're watching it. So join the awards. There's a live chat channel in the current show listings, and they'll be talking about the Oscars then. And then after it's over, Alicia and I are going to get together, and we're going to do a recap of the Oscar season, and we'll talk about our best picture opinions of the nominated films and the winners. I just finished my best picture watch. I've watched all 10 of the best picture noms, and I have a provisional ranking. So if you want to hear us debate those, we will be doing that about a week after the Oscars air.
Very good. We also will be releasing an Earthsea episode hours after this.
Oh,
so
my God.
It's really happening. Yeah, we waited 2 years to do it, but we finished the series with Marilyn.
Yeah.
So check that out. It was a really wonderful episode. Like, I think that was, I honestly, our Earthsea episodes hit.
Right.
They always leave me feeling something. So I hope
that's good.
Leaves it with the listeners too.
Very cool season. A book series that doesn't get enough credit for what it does in the world of fantasy literature.
I actually went to my local bookshop yesterday because I was in town with my wife, and I asked them to order me the Illustrated Collected.
Oh, sweet.
Because I knew they were not going to have it. Nobody carries that, right?
No, right, yeah.
But I was like, can you order that for me? And they're like, yeah, we'll have it in about a week. So I'm excited. I'm gonna get my hands on the Illustrated version.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
So also our affiliates have plenty of stuff going. They've got Radioactive Ramblings covering...
They just released an episode today. I think they finally finished the Fallout. They think they did their final Fallout episode.
Okay, and then they've got Invincible coming and The Boys. So they'll be all up in the superhero stuff ahead of our Cosmere coverage, which we've already started recording. So
awesome.
Don't worry, folks. We've got plenty of podcasts coming for you. And more details on the Cosmere feed and how you can follow it forthcoming.
Cool.
I just said Radioactive Ramblings. The Properly Howard is sort of the newlywed.
Podcast. Dropped their first episode today. And just to flag something for folks, you don't have to watch the movies that they're talking about to enjoy the podcast, because they are just entertaining as they are. And if you want to hear Steve do one of the best Schwarzenegger impressions that at least I've ever heard, tune into this episode because it had me in stitches.
I kind of like listening to Steve describe a plot anyway. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. It's so deadpan, but it's so funny.
I was watching a Weird Al video the other day. What a transition here.
Oh, you hanging out with Mark? Because Mark's a big Weird Al guy.
I wasn't hanging out with Mark, but maybe I should. I mean, I'm not a huge Al. I'm a Yankovician, a weird head. What are they?
I don't know, but I like that.
But he, in White and Nerdy, remember White and Nerdy? It was Ride and Dirty. It was a parody.
Vaguely, yeah.
They give him a brown paper bag like it's supposed to be. He's buying drugs, but he pulls it out into the Star Wars holiday special. And I was like, oh my God. I was watching it with Maya, and she was like, what about the holiday special? And I was like, you have to listen to our podcast on it now. So we were listening to the first half of it, and I was like, this is one of the most fun podcasts we ever recorded. Was a stupid holiday special.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Pretty good. Speaking of Mark, Mark and Nicole, never mind the music. They just had a sidetrack out on authenticity in the age of AI. And the week before, they had a Boys to Men episode. And I think what they have coming up is Shania Twain and feminism.
Very nice.
So that should be a lot of fun. You have a crossover pod coming up with them. You're supposed to, did you guys lock that down?
I think we're recording it in May. So it's still a little bit away.
Gotcha. And Nicole and I and Jean, the three of us are going to get together this week to talk about Paradise.
Very nice.
Is that on Hulu? We're going to talk about a little bit about season one, a little bit about season two. Kind of a mid-season check or early season check-in thing, because a lot of people are enjoying that show.
Cool.
So that'll be out.
Oh, we're going to do One Piece, by the way, I'll say, on the main feed.
Great.
Season two.
Okay.
Season two drops tomorrow.
Got it. Are you doing this. Episodic coverage?
No. Okay. Probably either one or two.
Gotcha.
We'll see. Okay. We'll see how dense it is.
Sounds good. And we're working out our House of the Dragon coverage plans. I know Alicia and I have we're going to do the Riz Ahmed Hamlet movie is coming out, and we've got some plans for that. We're going to do a What You're Watching, actually, about Hamnet, which was, I don't think you should watch that film, John.
Why not?
I think it would break you emotionally. I think it might emotionally break you.
He thinks I'm fragile, folks. Right in.
I was openly weeping at the end of Hamnet, man. I was like, tears were streaming down my face.
I'm not afraid of weeping.
Okay. Well, as long as I have Dr. Nick there to hold me afterwards, I'll be fine.
All right. Well, you and Dr. Nick can have a great night after we thank our Discord server boosters: Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dupe 71, Athena A, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, Adrian. And our lore masters, David?
Sim Martian, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Aduve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Andra B, Kwong Yu, Nathan T, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Colley S, Il Mariel, Paul K, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, Red Zippy, the TCS, Dopamini, Catch It, Ellen R, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chumbaruni, Katilla, Josh Liu, Paint in PDX, Corey G, Quinch, and Forever Last, Adrian.
And also,
Baby Jane Dow.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.